Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Smashy Business Show and Merry Christmas to you all. I'm Ward Ahmed.
And I'm Abdul Majid.
And it is Wednesday, December 25th, and we're almost at the end of the week. I'm sure that you're all at home celebrating the holidays. How are you feeling today, Majid?
Good. Everything has a Christmas tree. Every shop has a Christmas tree. It's
so much festivity. We have a Christmas tree right here.
Yeah, we also have one. So yeah, it's a good festive season. Enjoy with your family, friends.
It definitely is. And yesterday, actually, me and Majid were discussing how Christmas leads to such a rise in revenue for all these stores because of how many sales there are. And we actually tested this theory by when I was at the mall, I could not tell you the amount of stores that had sale. Every single store possible, like the festive season was really alive, and it wasn't just like stores like Baby Shop, Center Point. Yeah. It was also like luxury ended stores like Sandro. Like they all had sales, and they were really up
there. It's just festive seasons are best for sales and best for earning as well, because people are looking for gifts for their loved ones.
The mall was scary yesterday. Let me tell you,
a lot of people.
Imagine.
Yeah, everyone is there for the Christmas dinner, I guess.
I'm not even joking, but I remember when I stood at the elevator that is facing the Apple Store in Dubai Mall, and I looked down. It is so filled, you cannot even see the ground. That's how filled it was. It actually wasn't just people shopping for their family. It was also just families in general enjoying the winter time. Yeah. And I was like, what a bad day I chose to come to the mall. No, seriously.
It's not a bad day, but I guess it's just too crowded. Mm. But it happens. And that is why they've created the world's biggest shopping mall, Dubai Mall, so people can go there.
And it was still busy.
Yeah.
It's so large. But you know when I was walking, I kept having to like maneuver between people. I was like, damn, like, okay.
No, even with the biggest mall, I think people usually go to the main things like the fountain, that area. So it's overcrowded in that place. But there's very good crowd controls measures that are always there. They tell you to enter through, like go outside from this door. Mm. They'll try to get people in from this door. Mm. So they have very good measures going on.
No, they definitely do have. You know, Majid, I actually had such a wholesome moment this morning. And this is why I love the festive season so much. Everyone's in a good mood.
Yeah.
No, I'm being complete. Even the people who are like not even celebrating the actual holiday legitimately, everyone's in a good mood. Like it puts you in your like festive feels. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But what's it called? This morning, something so cute happened. So I hosted the Love in Dubai show this morning with Massa. And when I got off the show, I checked my phone and one of like my favorite teachers who had taught me, her name is Miss Burks. She was my history teacher until year 12. And you know what I saw that she said? Wait, let me read this out to you. She went like, I'm so proud of you. I always knew you were a good public speaker. And I was like, hey, like, what are you watching? There's a lot of videos. You know what? Because not everything is great. Yeah. And she went like, I was watching the Love in Dubai show. And it was such a wholesome moment for me because this was like, this, by the way, you know how many people this class had? Three people.
Nice. Only three.
Because basically everyone in my cohort, they just wanted to be computer scientists and mechanical engineers and doctors. So what ended up happening was our science classes were like packed with people.
Nice.
Yeah, and history class, only three people. And geography also had only three people.
I guess it's not a high-paying job. That is why people stay away. Because social sciences and cultural studies, anthropology.
Really good professions, too.
They are, but there's very low amount of, like, there's a scarcity of jobs.
Of course.
So if you're the top-tier social scientist, then you'll get a good placement. But usually all these people go into teaching, right?
Exactly, they do. But what's it called?
Research,
Majid,
or teaching.
What's it called? For me, the subjects that I actually took when I graduated, I was kind of everywhere. I took biology, I took chemistry, I took math analysis. That's basically the more, you know how there's like word problems?
Yeah.
And then there's proofing math, like you're solving the algebraic equations. We actually had two kinds of math.
Nice.
Not that we didn't have word problems, but if you did applications, it was all word problems. I chose analysis. It was the most difficult one, but I found it easier for me, to be honest with you. I didn't like word problems. They're confusing. They're so confusing. Math word problems are not for me, but not the point. Back to the point.
Very good with quick maths, very bad with algebra. Always hated algebra.
I think he would be good at the word problems.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably, maybe. Definitely. Yeah. Because what actually happened is when they split the mats in IB, okay, they actually recommended for everyone who wasn't good at like actual like hardcore math to just do applications.
Oh,
that's
nice.
What they recommended. But point is I took a bunch of subjects. I took chem, bio, math, but I also took higher level English, history, and Arabic. I was very confused because I wanted to go into medicine, but I also loved reading and I loved communications. But Majid, I can say this to you right now. Taking history is what made me communicate in the way that I do and what actually made me a better writer. Not even English class, by the way. History. History specifically, because what we were made to do is we had to write essays on the spot. And your essay, like say for example, if you made your essay, oh, in 1974 this happened, you're failing. You're not getting a good grade. It was all about like being evaluative, analyzing, you know, suggesting what things mean, like what's the implication here. That's oh. actually what made me a better writer, taking history, not
basically
English.
Basically comprehension, like trying to get to the idea which yeah. is in the subtitles, and, not like clearly
exactly.
out there.
And what was so enjoyable about history is that we took a look at like historiography. It was so interesting to see how what's it called? Like when you compare historians, but you also take a look at the limitations in their work. Do you see, like
nice.
This is the kind of thing we included in our essays. Like even if I mentioned XYZ historian, I'd have to take a look at how he would limit the study. You know, is it because of the fact that, like some historians, by the way, they only relied on oral interviews.
Yeah.
Only oral interviews. Not anything else.
And
they
like,
do you have historian friends?
I've never read history, like just to read history. But I've read Islamic history a lot.
Oh,
so,
it's always the funnest.
All, yeah, it's like just wanted
it's
to
enjoyable.
Know how the religion and everything
yeah.
Like originated and everything happened. And there's always, yeah, you're right that some of the historians, they have different methods. But the best ones, I think, are who would look at, who are like the second or third generation.
Mm.
Because they look at all the works, they evaluate the works. And then they come up with, like, they'll read four historians and then they'll give you a conclusive thought that this maybe happened because three of them wrote about this. So, yeah, history is interesting.
It is important and it taught me that not everything you see is the truth.
Yeah.
Even if it's written in place, even if it's if it happened, in hindsight, what are we thinking now?
Yeah.
It was for me, like, that's what was so interesting to see. Like, for example, I'll give you, what's it called? I'll give you a really big event that happened during the Civil Rights Movement. There was this, like, Washington March. Have you heard of it before?
Yeah, I've heard the name.
There was a really big march. It was called the Washington March. And I think they were marching. And the way that the entire event is looked at, by the way, is that this was, like, so successful. The people were marching. It was absolutely amazing. But then I remember when I was reading Malcolm X's autobiography, what he actually said was the entire Washington March was just a farce. It was a farce, and it was actually... the entire thing itself was not planned. It was not planned by whatever leader there was in power. It was actually a bunch of people who just got mad out of nowhere. But
nice.
The way that it was painted was that, oh, like, they're leading them, they created this march, they're giving them a space to be heard.
Yeah.
So that's what, it made me question everything. And I think that's the kind of dynamic me and Majid always have. I truly do think that, by the way. I come to you in the morning, I'm like, oh, Majid, why is this happening? I give you the question, and then you're like, oh, Ward, it's because of this. But I do believe that it takes one to ask something to actually reach the answer.
No, history-wise, there's two things that I always... love to read, like, quote whenever someone is talking about history. The victor always writes the history.
Exactly.
So if you're looking at political history, it's always the victor.
Yeah.
So you have to find sources from the loser's side to get a balanced picture. And the second thing is never repeat history. History tells us what not to do, so just don't do what history has taught us. Okay, let's move on to our stories.
Yes.
The very first one is that UAE's commercial property, which is office spaces mainly, they're booming and they're beating. UAE is beating Hong Kong, which is one of the biggest markets in the world. They're a global leader in office spaces.
Yeah.
But now, since Hong Kong's prices are going up, there's inflation, there's like 100 things at play right now. That is why everyone is trying to come to UAE, because again, For the 1 millionth time. Mm. No taxes, a lot of no income taxes, a lot of business-friendly policies. The processes are very quick, very efficient.
But there is the corporate tax now. And I saw a warning this morning that if companies don't sign up for it by the end of the year,
so
they will be fined.
Even that, to be honest, is not on the small businesses.
Of course.
You remember we always talk about it, that SMEs, the actually not SMEs, micro SMEs as well, MSMEs, all these businesses, they are not taxed still. So if you want to set up a business, you will be a part of MSMEs. So you won't get taxed. But the 15% tax, that's also not UAE's policy. It's the GCC policy. Mm. So the cohort that is a GCC, like all the countries, it's given to them by GCC.
Yeah.
So they have to implement it. But even that is on multinational companies, which are big, which earn 750 million euros. That's a lot of money throughout the year. Then they will be taxed 15%. So that's good sign that at least they're taxing the richest people, the biggest corporation. They're not just taxing a guy who has four employees and is running a small agency or a small tourism company.
It definitely is fair because we're also seeing it in how this is going to be implemented as of January 1st, 2025, where all companies in all of the Emirates in the UAE are obliged to provide their employees with insurance.
Yeah, that's
all
also
employees. So we are seeing that their rules are very fair.
Yeah.
They are extremely, extremely fair.
And even with the 15% tax, yesterday I was reading it somewhere that Oman is opting out of it for now. They don't want to do it. Saudi Arabia hasn't done it right now. UAE is there. Bahrain, they have implemented it. Qatar has implemented it. So even in within GCC, the countries are taking their sweet time before they introduce that tax.
And that's good. You know, it's really good that, you know, these countries in the GCC, they're thinking about it very carefully.
Yeah.
Because me and you have seen this when a continent or a country just decides on a tax. And we saw this specifically with the EU. So a part of their net zero policy, they have this 5% tax, to be exact. And if you're trading with them and you're doing something that's harming the environment and you're trading with them, they tax you on 5%. But that's where it's unfair. Because, for example, with Qatar, following the Ukraine crisis, the European Union wanted to move away from relying on Russian oil.
Yeah.
So what they did is they started relying on the liquid natural gas from Qatar. But what ended up happening is that because of the fact that Qatar started trading that with them, if you're trading with them, you're going to be taxed 5% on that revenue, which is completely unfair because, Qatar is trading on something that is harming the environment, you are buying it.
They're keeping your lights on, so.
Exactly. You're
just
buying
it. Be a little
it.
Considerate, yeah?
No, it's strange to me because it's like you don't need to be producing something to be a part of the problem. The reason why it's being produced is because you're buying
it. You need it.
It doesn't make sense whatsoever. But
no, there's a lot of factors involved in all the taxations. The interesting thing that I see in Middle East especially is, and with Saudi and UAE rising, like they've risen like anything in the past 2-3 years, they also have incentives in place.
Mm.
So if you have net zero targets and you reach them, you'll get incentives on taxes. You have a good workplace policy, you get incentives on taxes, your taxes go down. Even the visa process, for example, if you work for a company in UAE or Saudi, you need a company visa or some other kind of visa. There's like hundreds now in UAE. So there's many ways to come to UAE legally on visas, freelance visa, green visa, blue visa, I don't know. There's a whole list. But the main thing is when, for example, our company, if they sponsor us, if they do our visa, they are also, the visa fee is categorized on the basis of how many multiple nationalities you have.
Mm.
So that's also a good part. It's very interesting. The first time I found about it, I was surprised actually that if you have like 4 or 5 countries represented in your company, or at least continents maybe, but then you'll get pay less visa fee. You'll be in category A. So category A, you'll pay less visa fee. If you're in category B, like you have only 2-3 nationalities, you'll pay more. So there is incentive in getting multiple nationalities to work for you, being environmental friendly. Mm. So whatever good you do within the domain of your company, even if it's a small company or a big company, you get incentives from these countries. Yeah. So it's not, they're not like just taxing you. They're also giving you options to reduce that tax as
well. And just going back to the main story, this boom in the UAE's commercial property market, it's so important because of the fact that, you know, it shows that, you know, there's going to be increasing investments in the UAE in modern, high-quality office projects to meet this growing demand. And it's also solidifying the position of the Dubai and Abu Dhabi in you know, leading business and commercial hubs in the MENA region. Yeah. And now, secondly, for our topic today, it's about one of my favorite entrepreneurs. I will admit it, yes, Pavel Durov's Telegram has surpassed $1 billion in revenue, finally achieving profitability. So so over 12 million Telegram premium subscribers have tripled from that exact number from 2023, and they have experienced like significant increases in advertising revenue, and they've utilized monetization tools like stars, gifts, and mini apps. And Telegram actually now holds more than $500 million in cash reserves.
The good thing about the post that Pavel Durov did when he said talked about this profitability is it's a very interesting thing, and you need to know the whole case of Pavel Durov. He was jailed in France, then he got out on bail. He posted a 5 million euro bail, that's a big bail. He came out and everyone was like, he will give up Telegram's privacy. And then we did a story on it, that he agreed to the French authorities that if Telegram sees some criminal activity on the app, now they will share some data. But Telegram has the final say on it.
Yeah.
And if French authorities are, for example, investigating someone and they see that that person or that company or whatever that organization is using Telegram for their criminal activities, they'll request Telegram and Telegram will share their data.
Yeah.
So that is like the compromise he reached.
At least there's an approval process that's involved. And
but
just to...
The most interesting part of the post was that he said that he targeted all social media companies or organizations, all, for example, Facebook, X, all the big ones, that even without compromising on privacy, you can be profitable. So that's the most interesting part throughout his whole post. Stars and all these things, we've seen all of this in TikTok as well, on TikTok Live.
And a lot of I saw something soon. I saw something very recently of this, Majid, where news agencies are starting to have their own, like, you know how there's like WhatsApp channels?
Yeah.
They're starting to have their own channels on Telegram, and it tells you how much people use Telegram. But much more than that, what I find so interesting about the story of Pavel Durov and why, as an entrepreneur, I really look up to him is because there was a time where he was looking for where to actually headquarter Telegram, and he was going to station it in the US. But what he found was that, there were people, employees masked as FBI agents who were trying to work for Telegram, and immediately he was like, no, that's why it's in the UAE right now. But even more interesting, there was a time in my life, Majid, where, like, this is honestly how I thought of wealth. And to a certain extent, I still do think like that when my parents would ask me, okay, if you had money, what would you do with it? That's how they test me, like, what are you gonna do? And I was like, okay, if I actually had like a lot of money, what I would do is I would buy a bunch of houses in different locations. I am a believer that a war can break out in any location at any time.
So I just moved there.
Is it exactly? Now you gotta have a new moving location. You need to have a backup. But I always thought that. But then I watched a video of Pavel Durov talking, and he said that I don't own any assets. Like, I don't own homes. Because what that does is that it stations you in one area. You can't move out of that one area. You can't be free. And I found that concept so interesting because something that I hear from a lot of homeowners is that it does come with a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
It comes with
the
a lot of responsibility.
The upkeep of the house and the real estate is it's a lot, to be honest.
Mm.
But if you have some recurring revenue coming from the house, you can always use that money.
No, but especially in this country, honestly, Majid, owning a home is so amazing.
Yeah.
I would say one of the best decisions that my parents ever made is owning a home here. Because we don't have to worry about rent.
Right.
And you know, my relatives,
like,
they always tell
costs,
me this.
Right?
It is the biggest cost. I you know, I spoke to my father and, okay, yes, of course, we still pay the water bill, electricity, gas. Yes, these things do come into play. But, you know, my aunts, my uncles, they always tell me, be happy. You do not have to worry about rent.
Yeah.
Because rent in this country, it's expensive and it's increasing. It's increasing, especially with the rise of more people coming here. It's really increasing.
No, when I came here, the math that was given to me by my friends who have lived here and all the uncles and aunties and everyone was that only 33% of your salary should be the rent. So find a place which has like
33%.
For example, if you
earn
10K, your rent should not be more than 3,500. So find a place where you can live for 3,500 per month.
Mm.
So that's the math that was given to me, that the next 33.
That's really good, you know, Majid, because
so
I was,
some
sorry,
33% should be for all the expenses, daily expenses, water bill, blah, 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 eating, food, groceries. And actually, they told me 33% savings. I was like, quite difficult. In this economy, quite difficult. But they were like, at least if, even if you move your expenses up, try to save at least 10 to 15% of your salary. Try to get a saving at least in place, because exiting most of the, not this country, thankfully here you don't have to pay taxes or anything when you're exiting the country. You just pay your bills, all the bills that are due on you, and you just leave. So if you're, there's a diva bill on you and you leave, just pay that and leave. But a lot of countries, they have exit taxes. So Canada, for example, UK.
Do we have that here?
No, thankfully not. Here you just pay your dues. If you're using a postpaid plan on your phone, just pay the bill. Pay all the bills and just leave. No one will say anything to you. But a lot of countries have exit taxes. So those savings, basically my uncle's, the main idea was from my uncle who has a Canadian nationality.
Yeah.
She was like, I can't exit Canada. I live here and there. He's sometimes here, sometimes there. He works here. He works in Canada. So he's like, I can't exit the country without paying the taxes. So there's a lot of things involved. And again, UAE comes very nicely into this picture.
Of course,
you don't have an exit tax, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
You just pay your dues, whatever is on you, and just you can leave.
That's
no one will
nice.
Stop you.
No, you don't owe anybody anything.
Yeah.
And you know, Majid, I was actually having, I was having this conversation with my cousin on the way to work, and he told me what something I will never understand is somebody who's making a low salary in this country, why are they living in an expensive apartment? Just get a studio. No, seriously, he was telling me this. He went like, I don't understand this logic whatsoever. I understand that maybe for some people that's a part of mental health.
Yeah.
I understand it in that sense, but why? Why that much?
I'll give you
get
one
a roommate,
case.
Get a roommate, get a studio. I don't, that's just too much.
One of my friends, she came here. She's an Instagrammer. She has a lot of followers. So she came here as a content creator and wanted to create business, like her own thing here. For her, having a good house was important because she shoots inside. So she's a lifestyle creator. She shows the home. She
That's understandable.
See, but that's a very like outlier. It's a very big outlier.
Niche.
Because she has to use the house for her earnings as well. But for normal people, I guess four walls and a bed is enough. But just try to keep your costs low as much as possible. I am a very minimalist kind of a guy. I believe there should be just one couch, no like extra things. I told you, we were having this chat, you were like, what is your ideal house?
I don't agree with this, because
ideal
that's not how you make a home a home. You need to take a house.
Everyone's idea is different,
You need to take a house and you need to make it a home.
Yeah.
You know, that's what
design is. But that, if I buy something, for example, your house is bought, right? So you, whatever you do in the house, even the upkeep, the maintenance, it's your house, it's your property, it's your father's property, but it's your. For me, rent, house, doing something to it, making it magnificent. I'm not going to live there for like 20 years of my life. I will move out when the family size becomes big or my needs for another room come into play. So I don't want to do that. The day I buy my own house, trust me, you're going to walk in and you'll feel like a castle.
That's when you go all out.
Yeah.
That's when you
even
go
when
all
it's
out.
A 1 BHK, you'll walk in and you'll be like, oh, it's a castle. But spending on your house is, again,
I think you're very hyper aware of your location and whether you own it or not. But you can move it to the new location once you move up.
Yeah, but what if I have everything set up on a 1 BHK basis and then I move to a 2 BHK? Because again, my son will grow up. He will need his own room.
Yeah.
Then I'll have to buy more stuff. So I just want to have basics, not like basics as in like very bad stuff, just basic good stuff. So I have a very nice L-shaped couch. My son loves it. So
for him, the best ones. Yeah. I love these L-shaped couches.
My son, for IKEA? Him, the idea, the idea of a house is that couch.
Yeah.
He loves that. The big bed, the small bed, his bed. So he associates a house with those things. So whenever I move, I'm not going to throw any of it. Because for him, the walls and everything is not the house. The things in it is the house.
You know, it's so interesting. You
I
tell
get
me
you
this magic
to an extent as well.
I think very differently because what's it called? When I was a kid and we used to live in an apartment, I used to have this bed that had every Disney princess on it.
Nice.
And on the sides, it had like these diamonds covering it. And my mom is very into colors. Everything colors. Like she loves colors. Like even when I dress in black and white, she's like, why? You're being very basic right now.
Yeah.
But not, beside the point, she painted the house this very nice shade of like red and orange. And when I think of our old home, I remember these colors. And they actually bring me comfort. Like today, if you ask me what my favorite colors are, it's yellow, red, orange.
So home is a feeling.
It's feeling.
Not a place. It's not a place. It's never a place until you have bought it. If you've bought it, it's a very good place and a feeling. But if you're living on rent, trust me, it's a feeling.
Mm.
So whenever you move to a new house, just create that feeling and you'll
have. You know, you also mentioned something else that really stuck with me, Majid. You are right. Overconsumption is so bad.
Yeah.
Overconsumption, I am not into overconsumption, by the way. I only buy what I need.
Yeah.
If I know that I need something and I can't live without it, I will purchase it without even thinking much of it. But I don't actually like shop for so much clothes when I know that I have enough. Like I even know that there are a few like bits and pieces in my closet I don't even wear. So in my mind, until I actually summon the courage and wear them, because I get obsessed. Do you have like obsessions? Like one shirt that you really like?
No, I just have an obsession with color black. I always go to a store and buy a black t-shirt and my wife hates it. So yeah, whatever I'm wearing, everything which is not black is bought by my wife.
Yeah. And finally, for our last topic today, Musk's XAI has led a $6 billion investment round. And very interesting Middle Eastern investors have participated. So we have Saudi Arabia's Kingdom Holding, Qatar's Investment Authority, and Oman's Investment Authority, and the UAE's AI leading investment company, MGX, has also participated. But just to take a look at the investors in general that have participated, it is absolutely crazy. Not only do we have Middle Eastern investors, we have BlackRock, we have Morgan Stanley, we also have Valor Equity Partners. But you're already seeing here that these are big names.
And then
these are very, very big
the
names.
The chip giants, NVIDIA, also took part in this round. This was the Series C round because a lot of people will confuse it with the last round, $6 billion round. I don't know why he's always using $6 billion, but in May this year, they raised Series B fund. And Series B funding was $6 billion as well. Kingdom Holding was again there. QIA was there. Kingdom Holding, by the way, Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, he is also invested in X. So when Musk bought Twitter X now for $44 billion, even then he gave $2 billion. QIA also invested $500 million at that point. So they have invested in everything Musk right now because the man is on the rise. So NVIDIA is there.
He's already a leader.
The chip maker giants, NVIDIA, AMD, they also participated. Andreessen Horowitz, the biggest guys, A16Z, their logo says, they're there. So literally everyone participated in this fund because they know that XAI is the nearest competition.
Of course.
Like the top five. If you say the top five, it's ChatGPT, XAI, Google's Gemini, there's Claude. So there's like four or five big giants who are there, and XAI is one of them.
You know what I find?
Grok is pretty good.
I've
tried it.
You know what I find really entertaining about all of this is that in the FII 8 summit in Riyadh, Musk actually went on to say that there is a 10% chance that AI will go bad.
Go bad, yeah.
He will tell us all of this. He will make us paranoid.
And then
he will
he'll
make
be
us hysteric. And then he's going to dip his feet into the pool of AI more and receive $6 billion of capital pool. I just find him entertaining.
That's funny also because he recently raised it. Like May 2024 is not that far away. It's like 6-7 months before he raised $6 billion and then again $6 billion before the end of the year. And what he said makes sense. He said a lot of compute is needed. So on X, where he is, He said when XAI announced this funding, he said a lot of computers needed. And we actually know that running AI LLMs, they need a lot of computing power and then a lot of energy and then a lot of cooling. So yeah, all this money is going to go into making Grok best version of itself.
And they're, what they're also really trying to do is they want to develop more advanced AI models. And they're also looking to expand, what's it called, the supercomputer Musk AI facility in Memphis, Tennessee, that wants to essentially house at least 1 million graphics processing units.
So NVIDIA and Musk's XAI, they're already in partnership. This funding round is different, but they're already in partnership. They built a data processing center. I remember we talked about it. Usually a data center takes 6 months minimum, best possible minimum time is 6 months. Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, he said Musk was so quick with it, we built it in 15 days. He's so super efficient. He's like, I'm not wasting 6 months on just thinking, oh, I should buy this or this over the basis of $1 price change. I'll just buy anything and just build it in 15 days. And they did. So he's like, this guy knows no bounds.
He does.
He wants to go to Mars, obviously.
And more than that, the Middle East, the GCC specifically, they know no bounds. Because what they're doing here is that they are setting the stage for being a part of something really big in history. They're not missing out this time. They're not going to join late. They've joined exactly when the time is rising. And what gives me even more goosebumps about this entire situation, Majid, is I remember when I attended the Global Media Congress, is that a lot of these AI experts and specialists said that AI has not even actually reached its real potential. Yeah. This is just the top of the iceberg. Yeah. This is just the top of the iceberg, and it's only going to continue. And you know, I noticed something. I was using ChatGPT very... what are you thinking?
I just remembered the movie Terminator. Yeah, it's going to be... I don't know what's going to happen.
I still haven't watched it, but I was using ChatGPT very recently, and I noticed that... I don't know if this is a new feature or I just started using it, but it's like you put a topic in, and then you press the web part.
Yeah.
Is this new?
Search.
Yeah, it was not working for me one month ago.
Now it's giving you sources.
And basically what happened is I put something in and I was like, hey, please fix grammar and punctuation if any. And then it gives me the web goes off and I'm like, I was outstanding. I was like, wow. Because something that I don't like about ChatGPT has always been its lack of sources.
Yeah.
I don't ask it questions. I don't do that.
It gives you direct links. Like, go.
It never used to do that. It never used to give you... And if you asked for a direct link and you went to it, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, but now it does.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they're getting better.
That is so crazy.
They're going to take over the world, just kidding.
Sure. But with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. Merry, Merry Christmas to all of you. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Please don't forget to follow our newsletter on Smashy TV. You can also find us on Instagram, X, LinkedIn, and also YouTube. Thank you so much for watching.